Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph in the second line. The Gemara is now about to entertain a question that is similar to the genre of question that it just addressed on the previous daf. Previously, the Gemara asked, how do we know that the principle of chazakah exists and that we follow a chazakah? The Gemara went through different proof texts for the possibility as to where the source is for the fact that we follow a chazakah. Now the Gemara wants to know, how do we know the principle of going after a majority that the Rabbanon established? Where is that from? Rashi says that this is just an incidental discussion of this principle. Since it discussed the issue of chazakah, nakanamiha, it also addresses this issue, the principle of rov. Other Rishonim who believe that it's more fundamental, and that's because of Rav Huna's statement earlier that we said with regards to an animal, that as long as the animal is alive, it has a chezkat isur. And then once it is shechted, it has a cheskat heter, because rov shchitot are ksherim. So the principle of Rav Huna involves both principles, which is, number one, chazakah governs in the first place, and in the latter half, after the shchita is done, rov governs, and that rov tells us that the shchita is in all likelihood kasher, and the animal is kasher. Elim kain, we have some riuta, we have something that takes away from that rov. So he says it's more fundamental, and the question is a follow-up to this principle of Rav Huna. The Bali HaTosfot over here ask a question. Don't we know that we have a principle with regards to rov and chazakah when they are competing entities, that rov is greater than a chazakah? And therefore, if we already established that a chazakah is a principle that governs, then certainly rov should be a governing principle, because rov is stronger than chazakah. The Tosfot gives two answers. One answer is that Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, who doesn't believe that there's a pasuk that establishes the principle of chazakah, and therefore we need to firmly establish rov through a pasuk rather than a logical argument. Or the Rabbeinu Chaim, Tosfot explains, believes that the principle that rov supersedes a chazakah is not a logical argument, but rather is learnt out of the case of Parah Aduma, that we go after a rov even though there's a chazakah that opposes that rov. And since we're going to learn that from a pasuk, we have to establish, which we're going to see later on in today's daf, that Parah Aduma is involved in rov. We need to establish that there is that principle of rov with regards to Parah Aduma in order for it to be offsetting or to override the chazakah that exists by the Parah Aduma. And therefore, we need to establish the fact that Parah Aduma actually involves a rov. And if that's the case, then the question here is a relevant question. Minalan, where do we know it from? Dichtiv. It's an explicit pasuk in Parshat Mishpatim. Acharei Rabim Latot. We go after the majority. Chazal learned from that pasuk in Parshat Mishpatim that majority governs. So the Gemara says, okay, that pasuk is relevant with Ruba de'ita kaman, with regards to a rov that is in front of us, kigon. An example of that is Teisha Chaniyot, 9 butcher shops. The case that the Gemara is referring to is a situation in which in a city you have 9 kosher butcher shops and 1 non-kosher butcher shop, and the person finds a piece of meat out on the street, which is parush. It's left the stores. You can assume that the piece of meat came from the majority. You have a closed situation, which is that finite number of stores in the city are 10. The meat from this city comes from those stores. And when you find the meat, governing rov is those 10 stores. And since 9 of them are kosher, 1 is not kosher, we're going to say that the piece of meat that you found is kosher because it's a ruba de'ita kaman. Sanhedrin, lo kami bailon. Both regards to the 9 stores and the case of a Sanhedrin, we don't have a question. The case of a Sanhedrin is when you have a Beit Din of 23 that's trying a capital case or a corporal case. We know that the principle there is, based on this pasuk in Mishpatim, that if you have 12 people that say that he is innocent and 11 people say that he is guilty, then we go by the majority and say that he is innocent. So therefore, we have a principle already established, because Acharei Rabim Latot, that tells us majority governs. Whether it's in a case of kashrut or whether it's a case of a case in the Sanhedrin, we would follow the majority rule in that situation. The Gemara says, we don't have a question about that, because those two majorities are majorities that are in front of us. They are finite number of objects or people, and we can then count how many are on one side, how many on the other side, and determine what's the majority in the majority rules. Kigami Bailon, where we have a question is Ruba Deleta Kaman. In a situation where the rov is not in front of us, meaning that we are relying on a rov that is a statistical rov majority, but it involves the world at large, or a group of people at large, none of whom are in front of us right now, but we can know from an established empirical evidence that there is this type of majority that exists. And the Gemara gives an example, kagon katan v'ktana. We're talking about minors. You have a situation in which a minor's brother passed away, and his wife was a ktana, was also a minor. Now, the brother that passed away leaves this wife without children. The katan, his brother, is obligated to perform yibum or chalitza with this woman. So we allow, according to the Rabbanon, the katan to marry the ktana and perform yibum. If he has bia with her, then we let them stay together, and we assume that the yibum will be performed. One of the requirements of yibum is the akum shem le'achiv, is that he's going to have offspring for his brother. Those offspring have to come from an individual who has capability of reproducing, and from a woman who is also capable of reproducing. Now, we don't know for sure if a katan and katana involved in this situation don't have some congenital issue, or don't have some reproductive issue that's not going to allow them to produce an offspring. And if they cannot produce offspring, they're actually subject to the restriction of marrying a brother's wife. The only reason we waive the brother's wife restriction is because they're performing yibum. So we assume that a katan and katana are allowed to do this, despite the fact that we don't know for sure that this katan and this katana, these two minors, are for sure capable of reproducing, because we know in general the majority of all minors end up growing up and being able to reproduce. That majority is governing with regards to Dine Erva, and we still follow a rove, despite the fact that it's not a rove that's in front of us. So how do we know that that's the case? How do we know that that principle is a good principle? Not only when we have a finite number of objects or people, and we know we can count and determine the majority that sits in front of us, but even in a statistical majority or a majority where we know, in general, majority of people in the world grow up and are able to reproduce, how do we know we can rely on that majority? Minolon, where do we know that from? All right, so the Gemara now is going to make a number of attempts by the Amoraim to explain where the source for this rove, this majority that is not in front of us, meaning that it's a general majority. How do we know that that Torah condones such a principle or using that as a mechanism for decisions? So Amar Rabbi Elazar, Atya Mireisha Shel Ola, comes from the head of an Ola. To Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, V'nitach Ota Lintacheha, Ota Lintacheha, V'lo Nitacheha Lintachim. The Pasuk says with regards to an Ola, after it's shechted, the head is severed from the Ola, and there is a requirement that the Ola be divided up, based on the Mishnayot and Tamid, or quartered into a specific limbs that are going to be put on the Mizbeach. Gemara learns from the extraneous language of Ota, because that is the subject already of the Pasuk. Why do you need to tell me Ota Lintacheha? Just write V'nitach Lintacheha. Just cut it up or quarter it up into the pieces that are necessary. So the Gemara learns from that Ota Lintacheha. You can cut the animal up into the specified pieces, V'lo Nitachel Nitachim, but you can't subdivide them. You can't cut them any smaller. So if that's the case, V'nechosh, let us worry about the fact that this animal or this olah is really a trefa, and therefore it can't be put on the mizbeach. So how are we going to check for a trefa? We'd have to look through the body of the animal to check. Now, most of the items we can get to, one problem is the head. The head is whole, it's been severed by shechita, and now you can't subdivide it or break it down into smaller pieces. And maybe there's a possibility of one of the trefa, which is nechosh shema nikev krum shelamoach. Maybe there's a puncture or a hole in the membrane that is over the brain. And here you can't check it. The reason must be that we follow the rove. And therefore, since the rove animals don't have a puncture in their membrane of their brain, therefore we assume it's not a trefa, and that's how we're able to put it on the mizbeach without checking it. Mimai, who says that that's the case? Maybe he splits it and checks it out. As Rashi says over here, pile is partir, probably from the word parting, that he separates, he breaks them in half. Didn't you just tell me there's a restriction, that it can be subdivided, but it cannot be subdivided into smaller parts? So how are you breaking the head or splitting the head in half? That's only if you completely split the head in half, and now it becomes two separate pieces. If it's still attached, if it's still connected, there is no problem. So we do have a way to check it, and since we have a way to check it, maybe the Torah does demand that we check it. How do you know? There's no proof from there that we go after the rove. Maybe you actually do have to check this head by splitting it open, checking the membrane, and not violating the issur of nitachuntan lintachah by not completely severing the head, but keeping the two pieces attached together. So now the Gemara is going to make another attempt. Mar b'derei Ravina Amar, atyo mishvirat etzem bepesach. It comes from breaking the bone in the korban of Pesach. The Amar Achmana, the pasuk says, etzem lo tishbiru bo. You may not break any bones from the korban of Pesach. Nichu shema nikev krum shel moach. So we'll have the same suspicion as we had in the previous case with the Ola, which is the fact that maybe the membrane under the skull is actually punctured, and it's a treifa. El alav mishum damrin and zil bater aruba. Must be that we go after the majority of animals. It's not the animals in front of us. The majority of animals in the world don't have a punctured membrane. And since they don't have a punctured membrane, we're going to rely on that majority, even though it's not in front of us, to allow us to put this Korban Pesach on the Mizbeach and for the Balim to eat the Korban of Pesach, even though we can't check it. Now, unlike the previous case with the Ola, can't split the skull open because you're not allowed to break the bones in order to investigate whether the krum, the membrane, is actually whole. Mar says, Mimai, Dilma de Mana Kumrata Ale Vikalile Ubadikle. Maybe he'll put a hot coal on the skull, and that will cause the bone to be burnt away and to allow you access to the skull to check the membrane without actually breaking the bones. Titania, because you have a braita that says, Amchatech Begidim, someone who severs the sinews in the Korban of Pesach is not in violation of breaking bones, even though the sinews are just as hard as the bones. That's not covered by the restriction. Rasoreif Batsamot, and someone who burns the bones, it's not considered to be a breaking of the bone. So once again, here we have a possibility of checking for this treifa, and maybe that's what the Torah demands of us. That when it comes to the Korban of Pesach, you got to put a coal, hot coal on the skull, open up the skull, and then look at the membrane that's inside to check that it's whole and that it's not a treifa. So you can't prove anything from this case of the Korban of Pesach. It's just quickly to make a point, there is a major machloket between Rambam and the Ramban with regards to Safek Doraita. We have a principle in general that Safek Doraita, the Chumrah. Whenever we have a case of a Safek in a Torah law, we go to Chumrah, we go to the stringent side, and we're Choshesh for whatever the issue is, as if it was an Isur that was being violated. The Rambam says that Safek Doraita, in the Torah's view, is actually Lekula. And that Safek Doraita L'Chumra is a Din D'Rabbanan. The Rabbanan said, when you have a Safek Doraita, we go L'Chumra. On the other hand, the Ramban believes that Safek Doraita L'Chumra is a principle of a Torah level, and not a rabbinic level. We're not going to get into all the details about why he argues on the Rambam or how he disproves the Rambam's position. But the Rashba in the Torah Tabayit actually brings this case here as an example of where the Torah seems to be saying that even though there's a Safek, we still say that it's Asur. If it comes to checking of the membrane of a Korban of Pesach, and that is a Safek Doraita, because Doraita, if it's a treifa, it would be problematic to put on the Mizbeach and to eat it. It's a Safek, because we don't know what the status of the membrane is. So if a Safek Doraita is the Kula Midoraita, from the Torah's perspective, you're allowed to go ahead and bring the Korban, then what's the Gemara's question over here with regards to the fact that we need to check it? Why do you need to check it if Safek Doraita Mina Torah, you are totally permitted to do it? Yes, it's true, Midrabanan it's Asur, but if it's Midrabanan Asur, you're not proving anything when you bring this case to show you that you go after a Rove. Because the Rove that it governs against a principle of Dirabanan, that's not what we're looking for here. We're trying to look for a Doraita principle where the Rove governs. And if according to the Rambam, a Safek Doraita is Le Kula Mina Torah, then you didn't prove anything from here. So based on that, the Rashba says that the Rambam is incorrect, and that a Safek Doraita, Le Chumra, is actually a Torah principle and not a rabbinic principle. There are those that try to defend the Rambam's position and say that the Torah maybe says that Safek Doraita is Le Kula. Torah never assered something that was a safek, only something that was absolute. That is true when you can't check the information. But if you could check the information, efshar lebarer, you can be clarified. In that situation, maybe the Rambam agrees that the Torah says that a safek doraita is the chumra, even mi doraita, even min haTorah. And then that would allow us to have this case here of the Korban of Pesach also fit that rubric of the principle of the Rambam, that safek doraita is only the chumra mi derabanan. In this case, it'll be Doraita because of the fact that you're able to check it. Since you're able to check it, therefore, we would require you to check it. Elim Kane, we follow the Rove. And that was the Gemara's question. The Gemara and answers, now maybe it doesn't go by the Rove and you do have to check it. So now we have another attempt by an Amora to show us this principle from the Torah. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak amar atya me'aliyah. Comes from the tail. Dama Rachmana, chelbo aliyah tmima. When it comes to the korbanot of an ayil or a keves, they have their tail fats and their area around the loins needs to be put on the mizbeach. It's part of the chelev that is put on the mizbeach. And it has to be placed on the mizbeach intact, whole, because it says tmima. Maybe when you're severing off the fats in that area, you also happen to take away the spinal column. And in taking away the spinal column, you may be overlooking a problem with the spinal column. If there's a puncture, we'll see later on in the Masechta that Nifsaka Chuta Shidra, the main nerve that runs through the spine, if that is cut or severed in any place, that is a trefa. Now, how do you know it wasn't severed beforehand? Because you're taking a chunk out of the hind part of the animal, where the spine runs from the base of the skull all the way down to the tail bone, and into the tail, there's a chuta sidra, which is that the spine that is problematic or is an issue for trefa, when you're talking about the nerve that runs down the spinal column, it goes down as a single entity all the way down to a point where it breaks off into three branches. One branch goes down the right flank, one branch goes down the left flank, and one branch continues straight on and gets smaller and smaller into the tail. At that point where it breaks into three, then it's no longer life-threatening if it gets severed. So the Gemara's assumption right now is that you have to take out the fats that will impact on the spine above the point where it branches off into three different nerves, but rather it's up at the point where it's single nerve, and therefore you might be cutting away evidence of something that is a trefa you won't be able to check. Therefore, it must be that we're relying on the rove. The majority of animals don't have a problem or are not a trefa. So maybe you'll say that it was only detached, or you're going to take out these fats from the area that's below the split, and that'll be enough. The Torah says that you have to take it off opposite the place of the etza of the body, makom shaklayot yotzot, because the Gemara in Brachot tells us that the heart is mevin, understands, and the kidneys are the source of counsel or advice that is given to you. So lumata itza, when the Torah says that, it means at the point of the kidneys. And if you reach up to the point of the kidneys, you're already past or above the level of where the spinal nerve has broken into three parts. Therefore, you're severing it higher up on the back, and you might possibly be taking away something that is problematic or a trefa, and you're not investigating. So Gemara says, Mimai, how do you know that's true? Dilma de patachla ubadikla. Maybe he opens up the spinal column and checks whether the spine is intact. Eat mishum tmima. We already established that chabalia tmima. It has to be whole when you take it out. What about the fact that it's not tmima anymore if you open it up to investigate whether there was a sever in the spinal nerve? Hani mili. That's only when you cut it completely. In a case where it's left attached, late lamba, there is no problem. As Rashi explains over here, that it's still attached on the part that faces the back of the animal. He opens up the spinal column on the inside where it faces in towards the innards of the animal, and then he checks the spinal nerve to make sure it's all intact. Then afterwards, he cuts it off. So once again here, there's an ability to check it. Maybe you do worry about it because over here, there is a way to check it without violating the requirements of putting those fats on the mizbeach with a part of the shidra, part of the spinal column. So Gemara brings another Amora's attempt to explain this. Rav Sheshet braid the Ravidi Amar Achemi Egla Rufa. We learn it out from the Egla Rufa, which is brought for someone who was found killed between two cities. We don't know who the murderer is, and the closest city has to bring an egla rufa whose neck is chopped off from the back. Dam rachmana harufa, take off its head with a hatchet. Kashi shleima, it has to be done while it's still shleima, when it's still whole. And as Rashi explains over here, shleima ta'avi is afilu lachar harifa, even after its head's been chopped off from the back of the neck with a hatchet, forever it must remain whole. You're not allowed to dissect the animal afterwards. You're not allowed to do an investigation to ensure that it's not a trefa afterwards. Obviously, beforehand you can't do it because then it won't be shleima. But even after the fact, it won't be able to be cut open because it has to remain shleima. The lechosh dilma trefa hi. Maybe it's a trefa and that'll be problematic. Elalah mishum darmin and zil bataruba. Must be, again, that we go after the robe and assume that it's not a treifa. Chitema mai nafkamino. What's the difference? Who cares if it's a treifa? This isn't a korban. This is not being eaten. Why do you care if it's a treifa? Amri debei Rabbi Yanai, kapara ktiva kekodoshim. It has a principle of kapara. It says, kaper lamcha yisrael asher padita. The zakenim there washed their hands of the responsibility for the murder, and they use the word kapara. And kapara is a terminology that is associated with kodoshim. And just like by kodoshim, you can't have a treifa, so too by egla rufa, it can't be a treifa. Now, it's not that by egla rufa you can't have a mum, because mumim are permitted in an egla rufa. It's only that it's like kodoshim with regards to the fact that it can't be a treifa, similar to kodoshim. But if you need it to not be a treifa, then you have to have some ability to assess whether it's considered a treifa or not. And it must be that zil bataruba, that we're going after the rove. Rabba bar Rav Shila amar achemi paraduma. We can learn this from paraduma. Damar rachmana v'shachat v'saraf. You shech the paraduma, and then you burn the paraduma. You burn it into ashes, and then the ashes are put in the waters, the maim chayim, in order to make the mei nida that are going to be sprinkled. Now it says, mashchitata, there's a parallel from the juxtaposition of the two verbs of shachat v'saraf, that just like shchitata k'shit shleima, that it has to be shechted while it's still whole, av sreifata k'hi shleima. Also, when it's burnt, it must be whole. So once again, you cannot dissect the animal after the fact and check to make sure that it's not a treifa. V'leichish dilma treifayi. And let's worry that maybe it's a treifa and you can't investigate it. Allah mishum darmin and zil bata ruba. Must be that we go after the majority of animals that are not treifot. Chitema mai nafkamino. Why does it matter? Paraduma is not a korban. It's not being eaten. Why can't it be a treifa? Gemara says, chatat kariya rachmano. The Torah calls it a chatat. Therefore, it has the same principles as a chatat, which is that it must not be a treifa, similar to a chatat, which cannot be a treifa. So in both of these cases, since we have no ability to check, therefore we're going to say that the rove governs, and that shows us that when you have a rove, delo ita the kaman, that's not in front of us, these aren't all the animals in the world in front of us, we just know the majority of the animals in the world are not treifot. Therefore, based on that assumption, we're going to assume here, too, that the paraduma and the egla rufa were not treifot, and assume that what we did was correct and efficacious, and not worry about the fact that it might be a treifa. Rav Acha bar Yaakov amar, achem yisair hamishtaleach. We can learn it out from the scapegoat that is used on Yom HaKippurim. Demachmano amar lakachet shnei asirim. You have to take two goats, and you throw lots on the goats. Sheyeh sheyem shavim. They have to be the similar. Let's worry that one of them is a treifa. Elalav mishum darmin and zil bata ruba. Must be that we go after the rove. So now, with regards to the one that is going to be put on the mizbeach la'ashem, that's a chatat, that's going to be cut open, and there you can check the animal if it's a treifa. But with regards to the animal that's being sent out to lishtaleach, how are you going to check that it's a treifa? So the Gemara says, v'chitema may nafkalan mina. Why do you need to check it? It's not a korban. It's not being eaten. And therefore, maybe it can also be a treifa. So Gemara says, ha in goral koveh lazazel, but devar ruhi l'ashem. The goral has to take two animals that are both possibilities or have the option of being chosen l'ashem. And therefore, they both must be ra'ui to be brought as a korban, and a korban can't be a treifa. So even though one of them in the end becomes the Sayyar Mishtaleach, it had to be Ra'ui when it went into the lottery to be Lashem. Otherwise, it's not a lottery. You would only be able to pick one of the two to be the Sayyar Lashem. So now, V'chitema Dibad Kinanlei, maybe we check the animal. After we toss it off the mountainside, we'll go check the animal to see if there's any treifa in it. V'atanan, V'yamagil Machatzit Ahar, Achenase Evarim Evarim. The animal, once it was pushed off the tall tzuk, where the Seir Mishtaleach was thrown off, the body of the goat split into pieces before it got halfway down the mountain, and therefore there's no way you can check after the fact whether it was a treifa, because it's already been damaged so badly that it won't give you any information as to whether it was a treifa beforehand. So here we just had three different proofs to the fact that we go after a rove with regards to these matters of treifa, because there's no way for us to check. And since we can't check, it must be that we follow the rove. Rav Mari Amar, Rav Mari gives another option. Acha mimakei aviv v'imo. Comes from a person who hits his father or mother. Damar chumana katle, which is subject to a death penalty in Parashat Mishpatim. V'leicho shdilma lav avivu. Let us at least suspect the possibility that it's not his father. with regards to a mother carries the pregnancy, so you can know for certain, 100% for sure, that this child was born from this mother because she gave birth to the child. But the father, it's always a question mark as to whether the father is the real father or not. Allah mishum ta'aminan zil bataruba. The reason that we kill him and assume that he hit his father is because we go after the rov. Rov bilo tachar abal. And when it comes to a wife, the majority of interactions between the woman and another party are with the husband. We assume that it's all with the husband in most cases, but even if she cheated, still the majority followed the husband. If the majority followed the husband, then in that situation, we can assume that the child is born from this father based on the rov. And we're going to put him to death based on that rov. Maybe it's a situation in which his father and mother were locked up in a prison, and therefore there was nobody else there besides the husband and wife. And therefore, by definition, the only one who could have made this woman pregnant is the husband, and that's why we know for 100% sure that it's the father. Tosfos makes an interesting comment over here. Maybe the reason over here that we believe that his father is Dilma Mishum Dazlina Batar Chazaka, Temeda Aim Bechazkat Sadeket. We assume that the woman is a righteous woman. She hasn't shown us any tendencies to be otherwise. So why don't we just assume that she was monogamous with her husband? And that's why this individual is the father of the person that hit him. Gemara says, Afil Hachi, that's not determinant because Ein Apitropos Leorayut. There is no guarantor when it comes to issues of relations. That means that just because they're locked up in the prison doesn't mean that the woman doesn't find opportunities with the guards or doesn't find opportunities to have relations with other individuals, and we don't have any guarantees. Even if they're secluded, we don't have any guarantees that the husband is the only party that had relations with this woman. So therefore, it's not a definitive proof. Since that case is not really guaranteed, we're still following the rov once again. Now, some of the Achronim over here ask, why is it so obvious that a ruba de'ita kaman, rov that's in front of us, is able to be a governing principle and follow the rov because our charei rabim latot? Tosafot asks a question in Bava Kama of Chav Zayin, also in the beginning of Sanhedrin, with regards to a beit din that we follow the majority. How is it possible that we follow the majority when it comes to a din in beit din when we pasken like Shmuel versus Rav, and we believe that when it comes to monetary issues, we don't follow the rov? We have the principle that Shmuel tells us that ein olchim achar rov b'mamon. So how could you have a beit din that is giving rulings with regards to monetary matters, and we say we follow the rov of the individuals that are voting on the beit din? They determine what the outcome is in this monetary case. That is going after the rov in a monetary case. So Tosafot makes a distinction between beit din and other cases of mamon. And that distinction, he says, that when it comes to a beit din's ruling, once there's a majority, for instance, in the case of a beit din of 3 from a monot, there, if you have 2 versus 1, the beit din now becomes a unanimous beit din of 3 that are voting in favor of the hachra'ah of the psak. We disregard the miut with regards to a beit din. It's not that we follow the rov and there's still a miut. Once the rov has made a determination, that determination is binding on the entire court as an entity, and therefore the court is actually giving or making a unanimous decision. That is not true when it comes to majorities with regards to mamon, with monetary matters. Over there, the miut still exists. And because the miut exists, Shmuel says, we don't go after the rov because you have the offsetting factor of the miut. The Gemara now used a case with regards to a parent, or the killing of a parent, where we follow a majority. And we say that the majority of individuals who have a wife, the bilot, followed the husband. And since they followed the husband, we're going to assume that the individual that was born, these are his parents. This is his mother and this is his father. And we're going to punish him based on that rov. But if you believe, like Shmuel, with regards to monetary matters, that when the miut is still there, the miut stands against this rov when there's a safek, and we shouldn't determine based on that rove, that this person should be put to death. What's the difference between cases of mamononot, monetary matters, and dine nefashot? So the Shev Shmaitata makes a suggestion that the difference is whether the rove is established before or after the fact. With regards to this individual being the father of the party that did wrong to this individual, it was established before he ever did the Isur, before he ever did anything wrong, like hitting his father, cursing his father. That was already established beforehand. That type of rove is determinant, and governs because the miut is not relevant because the determination was made prior to the safek, to the doubt arising with regards to this isur or our prosecution of this individual who hit his parent. On the other hand, with regards to monetary matters, the rov and the miut are actually a derivation of the safek, of the disagreement that is going on over here. And since the safek is what generates the rov and miut, in that situation, the miut cannot be overridden by the rov, and therefore we don't go achara rov with regards to monetary matters. The Kuntres HaSveiko suggests that there's a difference between an individual who's coming to take money, because by money we have hemed mamono cheskato. We have a principle that the chazaka of where the money is currently is where it was all along and where it belongs. And therefore you have a chazaka against the rov, and take the miut that it's wrong, together with the chazaka that the money belongs where it is now, they can join together and offset the rov, and therefore there will not be a governing principle of majority with regards to monetary matters. But by dinei nefashot, there's no such thing as a chazaka that exists over here. A person doesn't have control over their body, doesn't own their body, and therefore there's not a chazaka or mukzak begufo where we can say that that's an offsetting factor against the rov, that this is actually the individual's father. And therefore, since we don't have a chazaka to offset, the rov does govern in that case, and the person will be put to death based on that. Rukana Amar, Atya Mihoreg et Anefesh. It comes from someone who murdered. Tamar Rahman and Katlei. The punishment for a murderer is a death penalty, and we're going to kill him. The Lechush Dimo Trefa Haba. Maybe the person, the victim that he killed, was actually a Trefa. And if you kill the Trefa, then it's a dead walking person that you killed. A Trefa is not considered to be a living being in the sense that if you murdered them, you're going to be held accountable for murder. It's not the right thing. You'll be culpable for it, but you won't be put to death for doing such a thing. So how do we know that the person that was the victim was not a trefa? We go after the rov, and we assume that the individual was not a trefa, like the majority of people out there in the world, which are not trefa. We're going to check him after autopsy, after the fact, and check to make sure that he's not a trefa. You're going to be minavel. It's a disrespect and a disregard for the honor of the victim to take them apart afterwards. Umar says, maybe it's worth it, because we're about to put somebody to death for killing this victim. Maybe it's okay to do an autopsy on the victim in order to possibly save the murderer over here, because there's a requirement on Beit Din v'yitzilu et ha'eda that you have to save as much as you can. You have to try to save the person from being put to death. Nechush shema bimkom saif nekev hava. So maybe, even if you say we're going to do an autopsy, how do you know the autopsy will be definitive? Because what happens if the weapon that was used to kill the individual struck the individual exactly at a point where there's a trefa? Maybe it hit the head, and there was a hole in the membrane of the head, and the sword went right through that. Or in the neck, or the esophagus, there was a hole, and when the head was severed by the murderer, he went straight through the area where there was a hole, or other places where holes are considered to be a trefa. Maybe he killed the individual in that manner. Now, Tosafot says you can't come up with far-fetched cases where that's not an issue, for instance, in a case where the person was drowned. So in that case, there's going to be no damage to the body. If there's no damage to the body, you can actually do the check after the fact. So Tosafot says that's true, but the Pasuk says that a person is killed for murder even if he has a weapon. If he used barzel, use eben. Meaning that that's not the sole way that a murderer is put to death, is going to be put to death for in the Torah. The Torah gives examples of situations in which it's not just drowning, and that murder is going to result in a death penalty, even though there was a weapon or there was damage done to the body. And therefore, we have to make an assumption here that we're going after the rov, that most people are not trefol. Rina Amar Achim Eidim Zomimim. Rina makes a suggestion we can learn it out of Eidim Zomimim. These are Eidim that came to testify against an individual falsely. And then someone comes along and says about these edim, imanu aitem, you were with us, so you can't be testifying about this case. Then they are punished with vasitim lo kasher zamam. You have to do to them what they tried to do to the other party. So the person that's on trial over here, they were about to cause him to be put to death based on their testimony. So we're going to put to them to death, the edim to death, who tried to put this individual to death. Why don't we worry about the fact that the person they testified about was a trefa? The defendant is a trefa. If he's a trefa, then their attempt to kill him wasn't a capital crime that is punishable by death. So how are we putting this person to death, not knowing that the individual who they are testifying against is not a treifa. Must be, because we say we go after the rove, and rove people are not a treifa. So here, maybe too, you'll say that we'll check him, do an autopsy after the fact. V'atanya beribi omer, lo harago ne'aragim, harago ein ne'aragim. Beribi is used here and many other places in Shas. Usually it means the gadol ador. Whether it's a adjective describing the individual themselves as the gadol ador, or beribi means in the name of the gadol ador, which is an unnamed gadol ador that's being quoted by this individual. When it comes to edim zomimim, if they were successful in what they did, then they're no longer classified as edim zomimim, and they won't be put to death with the same punishment as that they inflicted on the individual that was the defendant. So in the case here, the only way you could do an autopsy on the body is if the defendant has already been put to death. If he's already been put to death, the law of edim zomimim doesn't apply, because lo harago, only if they didn't successfully kill him, neharagim, they are put to death with the same penalty they were trying to enforce or punish him with, and therefore he would be still alive, the defendant. If he's alive, there's no way to check if he's a treifa. Harago, if they already succeeded at killing him, ain't neharagim, they're not going to be put to death. So the case has to be a case where you can't check. And therefore, once again here, you see that we go bata ruba, we go after the rove, in determining that these edim zomimim are going to be put to death, even though we don't know that the defendant who they testified against was not a treifa. So Tosfot asks a question in a number of these situations, which is that we have a view in the Gemara that a treifa ain't a chaya, that a treifa is not able to live more than 12 months. If that's the case, then the fact that the individual here is alive, or in the previous cases, the fact that the animal has lived more than 2 years, like by the Parah Aduma, why don't we say that it's automatically not a treifa because it successfully lived more than 12 months? So one possibility is to say that it's based on the position that believes that treifa chayo, that a treifa doesn't have any limitations on how long it can live. It can live even more than 12 months, and then they have no evidence that the fact that they're alive now or they've survived this long, that they're not a treifa. Then he brings another principle, which is very important. V'yesh tamar d'chol chazaka shalot nidbarara, any chazaka that was not clarified, lo no da'a afilu sha'achat lo azlinim batra. If we don't have any information that has established this principle firmly, then the chazaka does not take effect. And he says from that, we can learn halacha l'maaseh, that is, an individual shechted a bunch of animals and finds that one of them was a treifa. Meantime, he had taken milk from all these animals before and made cheeses out of them. So now you have all these animals, only one of them is a treifa, but milk from a treifa is treif, and therefore all the cheeses that you made are now a suffix treifa. What about the fact that the para was living until this point in time, and has a chazaka of being not a treifa? Maybe just now it became a treifa, right when I shechted it, not from beforehand. If that's the case, then when the milk was taken prior to the time it became a treifa. So he says that we don't say that principle unless you've established that the animal is bechezkat kashrut. Over here, you only have a reyuta, you have a deficit, which is that the animal now is a treifa. Now you want to say that the treifa happened at the last minute? That's something where you're trying to establish a chazaka, that until that point in time it was kasher. We have no evidence of that. You have nothing to indicate that that was the case. Therefore, it's not a chazaka. A chazaka has to be established, at least momentarily, has to have evidence that that is the case. Once that evidence comes, you can leave the person or the animal in that status as long as nothing changes, or until the final point where it does change. But if you never had the chazaka established, then you can't rely on that chazaka, and that's what he says is the case over here. With regards to treifa machmat sharea hitzrucha, but with regards to treifot that deal with lungs that are scabbing on them, if we were experts and we knew how to check lungs properly, then we would know whether this rucha is really covering up a hole or not covering up a hole. In that case, we would not make it asur. It's a double suffix. Safek ain't a treifa. Maybe the animal's not a treifa. Who says that the treifa happened before that point? Maybe it happened at a later point. With regards to the fact that we're machmir, with regards to a srucha on the lungs, that's a deficit in our understanding, not a diminution in the chazaka of the animal, because the animal has a chazaka of being a kasher. And just because we're establishing that it's a treifa now, based on our lack of knowledge, doesn't necessarily ruin the chazaka that was there until that point, that this animal was alive. And we can assume two things. One is that maybe it's not a trefa at all because we just don't know. And if it is a trefa, maybe it happened at the last minute. And based on that, we could be matir the milk from the animal prior to that point in time when you deal with this particular type of trefa in the animal where it's an uncertainty and has to do with our lack of knowledge that causes us to cast aspersions on the kashrut of this animal. Ravashi Amar, Ravashi gives us the last attempt to show where we learned this from in the Torah. Atye mishchita atzma. And that might be why it's also relevant to our Masechta, because you can learn it out from shchita itself. Tamar Rachman shchot v'achol. You're allowed to do shchita and then eat that which is shechted. V'lecha shem v'makom nekev kashachit. Maybe he shechted exactly along the place where in the esophagus there was a hole, and that was a trefa, and he cut straight through where the esophagus had the hole, and now he's covered up the trefa, and there's no way to investigate it after the fact. Elalav mishum damrin and zilbata ruba. Then it must be that we are going after the rove, and we are assuming that the rove of animals are not trefot, and therefore your shchita is an efficacious shchita, and you can eat the animal despite the fact that we don't know for certain that it's not a trefa. Amar Ravashi, amrit the shmaitata kamei de Rav Kahana. I said over this issue that was raised in the daf today, and the answers that were responded in my answer to the question about how do we know that the Torah condones the principle of following the majority, even in a situation where it's not a majority that's in front of us. Ruba deleta kaman, in a case of a rove that's not immediately in front of us. V'amrila Rav Kahana kamei de Rav Shimi, or that some say it was Rav Kahana said it over in front of Rav Shimi, v'amar le. And they responded, the person who was told to, v'dilma eched efshar efshar, eched lo efshar lo efshar. Maybe the principle works this way, which is that when it were efshar the varer, you can check it out, we will compel you to check it out, and we won't follow the rove. Where there's no other choice, meaning we're in a corner, we're in a bind, and there's no way to check, in that situation we will permit it to follow the rove. So all these cases that you brought here, maybe it's permissible in the Torah to follow the rove because we have no other choice. And therefore, the rove governs even in the Eruba Deleta Kaman. But if we have an option to check it out, we're not going to be so mech. We're not going to rely on the rove if we have the ability to bivarer, to clarify the situation. If you don't say this, then you run into a problem with the shita of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is a position to chayish the miyuta. We've seen this Rabbi Meir before. And we also saw that Rabbi Akiva very possibly follows this position of Rabbi Meir as well. And he is choshesh for the minority, at least the miyut to amatsui, something that is a miyut that is significant enough. And we do not determine something based on a rove. So now what is Rabbi Meir going to do with regards to shchita? Hachanami delo achil bisra? We're going to say he doesn't eat any meat. He'll never eat meat because you have a fear that if you shechted the animal, maybe it went through a part of the animal where it was a trefa, and now you're not going to be able to tell, and therefore he's not going to eat meat. Okay, why not? Maybe he was a vegetarian. He didn't eat any meat. That is true with regards to a position of Rabbi Meir where he has a worry, and there in Midrabanan, he's going to say, I'm going to go to Chumrah, and I'm going to say, I'm Choshesh the Miut. I worry about the minority. Since I worry about the minority, I'm not going to eat meat, so I'll be a vegetarian. The problem is that there are certain situations in the Torah where there's a demand for eating meat, and that demand for eating meat can't be, I'm going to make Chumrah myself, and I'm not going to eat meat, and therefore I'm not going to make the mitzvah. That you can't say. And that's what the Gemara says, Pesach v'kodashim, ayik in the Meimar. Comes to the Korban of Pesach, that there's a requirement that each individual bring a Korban Pesach and eat the Korban Pesach. And Kodashim, where the Kohanim have to eat the Kodashim in order to give kapara to the Baalim, there their mitzvot to consume the basar. And you can't say, I'll go to Chumrah and not eat the basar. Ma'ika the Meimar, what are you going to say in those situations? Those situations you're compelled to say that the person must eat the meat and follow the rove, even though Rabbi Meir believes that Yechoshesh the miut, and we don't follow the rove. As Tosfot points out over here, Mibasar Taiva lo parich, from eating meat in general, we don't ask a question. Mishum dinira nidorait. Rabbi Meir lo chayish meir the miuduta. Rabbi Meir doesn't worry about a miut min haTorah ela midrabanan. And therefore, by Basar Taiva, even though the Torah tells you can eat meat, nevertheless, Rabbi Meir can say, I opt out of eating meat. I won't eat meat because I can do something that's the chumrah midrabanan. The being choshesh the miuta is not a Torah principle; it's a rabbinic principle. Therefore, I can go the chumrah. But when it comes to mitzvot, I don't have a right to do something the chumrah to negate a mitzvah of the Torah. I can't make a bimachmir myself and then prevent myself from doing a mitzvah of the Torah. And that's why the Gemara asks from Pesach and Kodashim, elheichad efshar efshar, where it's possible to check, we force you to check, and we're choshesh for the miut. If it's impossible, lo efshar, then it's impossible. In that case, even Rabbi Meir will agree that we follow the rove. And the Gemara is saying, hachanami, so too, just like with Rabbi Meir, that's the principle. Maybe so too by the Rabbanon, that is the principle. The Hecha d'Efshar Efshar, where you have a possibility of checking it, we will demand that you make the check and don't follow the Rov. Hecha d'Lo Efshar, Lo Efshar, where it's impossible, we don't require you to do the check because it's impossible, and therefore you'll follow the Rov. But that will limit the applicability of using this Rov, the Leta Kaman, in these situations, to only in cases where it's impossible to do otherwise. Now Rashi says, in the end, we do know that the Chachamim tell us that we do follow a rov, the Leta Kaman, because we know from the example of Yibum, which was the first example the Gemara asked about, where Katan and Ktana, it's a machloka between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Rabbi Meir's Chayesh the Miyuta says they may not get married, and we cannot allow them to be together because there's a possibility that if a Miyut, there's a minority of individuals who will not be able to reproduce, and therefore it'll be a violation of Eshet Achiv, and so therefore we wait until they're old enough so that we know they can reproduce and they show Simanim of maturity and the ability to reproduce. Then once that's been established, we'll allow them to perform Yibum. The Chachamim disagree and say that a Katan and Katana can get together even before that point in time because we follow the majority. So we know that the Chachamim paskin halacha that way. How do they paskin halacha that way if we don't have a source based on what we just said now? Because maybe the Torah only permits that type of behavior when there's no other option, no other alternative. But if there's an alternative and you can't check it, maybe we will demand that you check it. So Rashi says over here, Ela vadai halacha l'Moshe Misinai. It is a Mesorah from Moshe Misinai that had the samchina and aruba afil hecha de efshar. Even in cases where it's possible to check it, we still rely on the rov, rov de leta kaman. That's one possibility Rashi throws out. Inami, another possibility is acharei rabim lahatot. The pasuk that we brought in the beginning, we said that that was only in a situation where it's a ruba deita kaman. Rashi says, mashma ben ruba deita kaman, ben ruba deleita kaman. Maybe that pasuk references both a case where we have the majority in front of us, like a case of a beit din or a case of teisha chaniot, as well as a case where it's katan and katana, that rov governs in either of those situations, and we will not make the distinction that the Gemara made over here. Then Rashi says something interesting. And based on this conclusion that I just told you, that we follow a rov, when it comes to the shechting of an animal, we don't check the 18 things that can make the animal a trefa. We don't investigate and check each one of them. We assume that majority of animals are kasherim. If you know vadai that they're a trefa, obviously you cannot rely on that. But absent that, we will not check the trefa. We'll assume that they're okay. But what about the fact that in tekuvet areya, why do you have to check whether there's sirchot, whether there's holes or problems with the lungs? Mishum deshchiach bareyuta, because that it's a very common trefa, therefore batkinan, because there's no longer necessarily a row that all animals are kasher, because we find many animals that have this problem in them. Since it's a strong minority, or maybe even a majority of animals that have that problem, we force you to check, and you have to check the lungs when it comes to the possibility that the lungs have a puncture in them. Ve'eche ditrami difrashereya v'lo badok, in a situation where their lungs for some reason disappeared and you didn't check them, mit'achla, you can eat the animal, desamchina naha, v'hadaravuna. We rely on this, meaning that we go after the rov, the majority, and Ravuna's principle that says, once it's been shechted, it's v'cheskat heter omedet, unless you prove to me otherwise. And he says, v'eim mefarsim adavar. We don't let people know this, we don't make a public announcement about this, because then people won't be so careful to check the lungs, because of the fact that if you don't check the lungs and they disappear, then the animal is considered or classified b'diavad to be kasher. So we don't want to tell people that, because we want them to make these efforts to do the check, because there's a high likelihood, or there is a significant enough minority of animals that have this problem, that we want you to check them. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Yud Bet, Amud Aleph.